Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, is now the place for smart coverage of the 2012 presidential race. Right now on the site, your comments on the scheduling snafu for the president's address and Carol Markowitz's commentary called Don't Blame Sarah Palin for Seeking or Getting Publicity. 2012 is starting now at itsafreecountry.org. So we just talked about the transportation bills the president is urging Congress to pass when it's back in session. Guess what else is on their plate? Extending the federal flood insurance program. As we now know, very few homeowners insurance plans include flood damage. It's a federal program and must be purchased separately. It's part of FEMA, and Hurricane Katrina put it heavily underwater itself and has to be reauthorized by Congress before September 30th. Joining me to talk about the program and the holdup in Congress is Leslie Sism, staff writer and news editor at The Wall Street Journal. Welcome back to the show, Leslie.
Thank you very much.
Why is flood insurance a federal program in the first place and not part of private homeowners insurance?
The federal involvement dates to 1968. There was a lot of flooding along the Mississippi River and in other parts of the country, and the federal government was sending a lot of disaster aid after these floods. So the government decided, Congress decided in 1968 to set up a flood insurance program so that it could sort of pre-fund the money that was going to be sent out after these floods for rebuilding. So why wasn't the private sector involved? The private sector insurers maintain that flooding is just one of the most unpredictable risks to try to price. There just aren't real good actuarial tables or, you know, the way the insurance companies can figure out how many car wrecks they're going to be because they've got lots of years of data to work up tables for. And they, you know, people have been dying for hundreds of years that the insurance companies have been around. So they've got lots of data on that. But it's really hard to predict and to price it. And insurers feel also that the only buyers are going to be the people most at risk of flooding. So you get what's called adverse selection, which makes it a very expensive product.
And that's certainly what a guest from the insurance industry said on our show yesterday. Do you buy it? Is that factually accurate? Or is this kind of, you know, a special interest piece of legislation that lets a powerful industry, the insurance industry, off the hook from taking risks that would seem to fall into their bailiwick and hands it to the taxpayers?
There are a lot of issues involved in this reauthorization of the flood insurance program, and one of them is whether the insurance should be provided by the private sector rather than the government.
It would get passed along. I mean, the insurance companies maybe would take a little bit of a profit hit, but I guess without the federal subsidy, it would also be much more expensive to insure your home if you lived in a flood-prone area, do you think?
The program is widely recognized to have subsidies in the premium rates, and the subsidies mostly go to people who live in older properties, like, you know, 1950s, 60s, 70s properties that were built before building codes got better, and, say, along the coast, they started requiring everybody to build on pilings. So a lot, the program when it was set up in 1968 was built with the concept that it should provide affordable insurance, and so some of the rates are subsidized. So that's one of the tricky issues now is what do you do about these subsidies? Do you continue to let people have below market rate pay rates that are not actuarially sound? How soon, how much should they be bumped up? How quickly should they be bumped up?
Right.
So that's one of the tricky issues.
Do they get the same subsidies for new development?
Generally, the new development is considered to be more actuarially sound in the pricing because the newer homes are built to higher codes and tougher building codes, and they are built on pilings. So it's just, you know, the flood water is going to rage underneath your house. But the big problem with the flood program as it now exists is that it's got all these older properties that are built in low-lying areas that are built, you know, built there on, you know, brick foundations or whatever foundations, and water just gushes into these homes, you know, and they're just sitting right there on the ground. And so that's a real tricky problem.
Yeah. Although,
and a lot of these may be more moderate-income people living in these homes.
But is it true that one problem with flood insurance is that the homes along the rivers that get flooded or coastal areas, it might not be the construction that's at fault. Maybe it's the shopping mall in the former farmer field that used to be able to absorb water that now runs into the river. Is that possible?
Yes, that's part of the debate, too, that some of the altering of rivers and streams by the construction of dams, levees, and other flood control structures also may increase the risk of major floods and development, in addition to the kind of development you're talking about, the shopping center development.
And is flood insurance mandatory for many people, depending if they live in certain areas?
There are designated high-risk areas on maps that the government prepares, and if you are buying a house that has a mortgage from Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or entities like that, you are required to carry flood insurance for your while you have that mortgage in for that property in the high-risk area. Studies have shown that people often let the insurance lapse after, you know, they can let it lapse after a few years, and there's no real system for, you know, determining if they still got the insurance.
I see, because it's a bank requirement, not a government requirement.
No, it is a government requirement, but there are studies that show that despite this requirement, over time, fewer than half of the homes that have the mortgages in these areas are still carrying the flood insurance.
Listeners, any calls on flood insurance? Some of you have flood insurance. Some of you are trying to claim benefits on flood insurance right now, unfortunately. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, as we talk about the federal flood insurance program and the debate over details before it has to be reauthorized by Congress by September 30th. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, with Leslie Sism, staff writer and news editor at The Wall Street Journal, my guest. And let's take a call. Here is Al in Valley Stream. Al, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to relate what happened here in Valley Stream and in Long Island where I am. Sorry. FEMA suddenly changed the designation from this area, which was an area, I believe it's designated X, that hadn't flooded in 100 years, to a high flood area, and they said everyone had to buy this $2,000 a year flood insurance willy-nilly. People have been very upset, but there's nothing you can do.
Is it because they now see the area as a higher risk than they used to see it? It's not a every 100-year flood zone anymore. It's a more frequent flood zone as they anticipate?
No, there's no flooding here than there was last year.
Okay.
We're not in Long Beach here. We're in an area that is close to Sunrise Highway.
Right.
But this is what they did willy-nilly. $2,000 they wanted. Now, there was a discount if you did it right away, but there are many people that have to pay $2,000 for this.
Right. And that's a subsidized rate, I guess, because of the taxpayer money going into the flood insurance program. Does this sound familiar to you, Leslie?
Not entirely, but it is There is a lot of debate and concern about the accuracy of the flood maps, and the government is constantly trying to update and improve them. But frequently after disasters, you can go back and see that the flood maps weren't showing high risk where the floods ended, and then other people who were in a high risk area didn't get flooded. So there is concern that the maps, need to constantly be updated. And one of the reasons the maps aren't always accurate is for the reason you mentioned earlier. With all the shopping center or
right.
other construction, that
right.
can alter the circumstances too.
And we'll be talking on tomorrow's
yeah.
show about insurance and global warming. Insurance companies, as I understand it, I don't know if you want to preview this a little bit, but we're among the first to start doing kind of mathematical calculations, because they're in that business with their actuarial tables, mathematical calculations as to the increasing risk of floods due to rising water levels from global warming.
Right. That will be a very interesting show for you. I wanted to make one other note about the prices of insurance and the insurance industry position on the pricing. Mm-hmm. In this debate about how to overhaul the National Flood Insurance Program, whether to reauthorize it as is or what kind of changes to make, some of the insurance industry trade groups are advocating that the rates should be very much actuarially based, so that they would probably go up a lot of places. And then they recommend that the government should give subsidies to the lower-income, middle-income people who can't afford those high rates, that rather than subsidizing all rates or holding down the rates, why not let them go up to high rates as they should, to reflect the risk in certain of the highest risk areas.
Mm-hmm.
But then help people afford to live there if they're moderate income, provide them a voucher or something, provide them just the subsidy. But that way you would get the rich people paying full freight rather than those perhaps rich people getting subsidized rates.
Right, and I think Adam in Roslyn wants to go further than that. Hi, Adam.
Hi, I think it's a mistake whenever we bring government into the picture when we don't have to, as from a payer perspective. When the Pentagon was paying $75 for a toilet seat or $100 for a hammer, that was the Department of Defense, that's government money. That's when people stopped following the bill. When Medicare fees and Medicaid fees are just off the charts, like no human being could actually pay them individually, again, it's government money. When the individual purchaser is saying, well, this costs this much, this costs that much, they're comparing, they're paying attention, there's less graft, there's less waste. Whenever you bring the government into it, the system will probably be underfunded. It probably will be, misuse. I think it's
right.
a very naive thing for us not to pay more attention to the fact that privatization essentially is a more efficient way to go, mainly.
Right.
Adam, thank you for your call. And to his point, Leslie, why should taxpayers from everywhere subsidize people who want to live in an area that's likely to flood out? Why shouldn't that just be an area where people don't build because it's too risky, unless they want to pay for their insurance?
I don't really know how to answer why, but the insurance industry, there are parts of the insurance industry that would agree that it's not wise to have a rate structure right now that allows that to happen. And also environmentalist groups are aligned with the insurance industry on this. They say by having rates that are subsidized that are not actuarially sound,
mm-hmm.
that it does encourage a lot of coastal development. And so, then you build more properties that need more insurance, and this problem just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Whereas
right.
if we'd, decades ago moved to rates that truly reflected the risk, then it would have discouraged some of the construction that has occurred, particularly in coastal areas.
Right, and particularly of those shopping malls and developments that we talked about before that are on lands that could have been absorbing the moisture in the past and that make the areas even more flood-prone than they were. And so to that point, here I think is an interesting call from David in Roseland, who's a real estate lawyer. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your thought?
The fact is that most states have a law, and it's case law, that if two adjoining landowners do nothing to change the contour of the land, and the water from the uphill land goes across the downhill land, there's no cause of action for the discharge of the water. The minute the contour of the land is changed by adding a house or changing the slope of the land, the uphill landowner becomes liable to the land, the downhill landowner for any damage of the rushing water.
So that's relevant to what we were just talking about, are you saying that homeowners have some legal basis on which to sue shopping mall developers for changing the contour?
Absolutely. If an engineer or a hydrologist or whoever the expert is that you need for this type of a case says that there has been an artificial change in the flow of the water, the perfect example is diverting a stream on one piece of property because you want to develop it, and all of a sudden the water goes in a direction that it never went before.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you, calling from Roseland, you're in that sort of Patterson-Caldwell area where things are so bad right now, right?
Well, let me tell you, I live in North Caldwell, and there's a shopping center called Willowbrook. It is underwater, and it's in a low part. The Passaic River comes, and it's all, it changes in intensity because of the development of the land. It was there. Nobody worried about it, but now it can't go below the parking lot. It can't be taken up the way land could do it, raw land could do it. So now it spreads wider and wider.
That's so interesting and so sad. David, thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. And Leslie Sism from the Wall Street Journal, before you go, this idea of mandatory flood insurance, gosh, it sounds a little like the health insurance problem that's getting the Obama reform into court, trying to get the young and healthy to share the cost by mandate and therefore lower the risks. Is it a precedent on which the health reform bill might be defended?
Well, the mandatory provision only applies to people buying flood insurance within the high-risk zones that are identified on these flood maps. So it's not a exactly parallel situation. You know, they're just saying if you're going to buy within these high-risk areas and you're going to take out a mortgage that's backed by Fannie or Freddie, we've got to protect federal taxpayers because, you know, from loss.
But if they were going to completely privatize it, then they would have to probably mandate it for fairly wide swaths, because otherwise only the people at the highest risk would buy it, and then it would be either unaffordable or it would be a net loss for the insurance companies. So what's your best guess? We have 30 seconds. What's your best guess for what Congress will actually do with the flood laws with the September 30th deadline?
Okay.
Does Irene change the picture?
Irene does make it a hotter topic, but they don't have enough time between now and September 30th to do any kind of major overhaul. So my prediction is they're going to do another short-term extension of the program on its existing terms, and then in over the next year debate all these issues that we've been discussing in this phone call and try to figure out how to improve the program, including whether it should be privatized, but that's probably not likely.
Leslie Sism, staff writer, news editor at The Wall Street Journal. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
And we'll stay on the environmental track for a few minutes coming up. There's a Canada to the Gulf of Mexico Jagundo pipeline plan that has environmentalists oiling mad now. You might have heard Daryl Hannah got arrested over this, and we will explain the controversy coming up next. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.